There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Mandel, and I am your host. On today's program, Jesus is the reason why two NBC stations will not be showing the controversial new series, Book of Daniel. Or is he? Both stations are owned by growing TV station conglomerate Nexstar. And we're going to look a little bit more at this company because it looks like there's something more that lies beneath the surface. And of course, we'll catch up with what's going on in our media environment with some headline news. Do stay tuned. On January 3rd, Michael Copps and Deborah Taylor Tate were sworn in as FCC commissioners. This will be a second term for Copps, a Democrat who has been on the FCC since 2001, and he will remain on the commission through June 30th, 2010. Tate is a Republican. With the exit of Republican Commissioner Kathleen Abernathy at the end of last congressional term, the FCC remains one commissioner short, with two Democrats and two Republicans. That split likely will continue to slow the introduction of controversial issues for action, like revising media ownership rules. There are still no clear candidates for the open commission seat. The Bush administration has largely ceded responsibility for choosing the next commissioner to Senate Commerce Committee Chair Ted Stevens of Alaska. 2006 will be a busy and important year for communications policy and legislation, so the Bush administration and congressional Republicans are not going to want to be caught in any deadlocks at the FCC. One issue that's been waiting on the table for action has been broadcast indecency. In fact, the entire year of 2005 passed without the FCC issuing a single fine for indecent content. This, despite the fact that 189,362 complaints were filed with the FCC, more than any year except 2004, where the Janet Jackson Super Bowl halftime helped push the complaint total over a million. The FCC's Enforcement Bureau has reportedly assembled a package of fines and dismissals for the commissioners to vote on as a package, but it has not yet come up for action, even though most commission watchers believe it would before the end of 2005. On January 3rd, CBS officially became an independent company again, making its debut on the New York Stock Exchange after separating from media giant Viacom and its former siblings like MTV and Paramount Pictures. But that doesn't mean that CBS is just a television network. The company takes with it such properties as the UPN Broadcast Network, the Showtime Cable Network, King World Television Syndication, and the newly renamed CBS Radio, formerly known as Infinity. That leaves CBS as the second largest radio and TV station owner in the country by revenue. Rupert Murdoch's News Corp remains the largest TV owner and Clear Channel the nation's largest radio owner. And Texas is turning out to be the nation's hotbed for television provided over broadband internet lines called IPTV. The newly renamed AT&T, formerly SBC, announced on January 5 that it will begin offering cable television service over broadband to select customers in San Antonio, with up to several hundred customers getting the service within a few months. There are still several technical issues that AT&T is working on, which is why the company is taking the rollout slowly. At a public demonstration in November, some of the advanced features that AT&T is touting didn't actually work correctly when the company tried to show them off to Texas Governor Rick Perry, who attended the demo. The nation's other new telephone giant, Verizon, won't be left too far behind in this race. That company announced that it will make its IPTV system available to 1 million potential viewers in the Dallas area by the end of 2006. In order to accommodate the much higher quantity of data necessary for broadcast quality video, both companies are increasing the capacity of their networks. Verizon is bringing high-capacity fiber optic network lines directly to subscribers' homes, which greatly increases the bandwidth subscribers can theoretically have access to. AT&T is taking a more conservative approach, bringing fiber lines closer to subscribers' homes, but not actually running fiber directly to subscribers. The reason why Texas is the place for IPTV is because last year Governor Perry signed legislation that brought cable television franchising to the state level. In the rest of the nation, each new cable operator has to negotiate with individual municipalities to begin offering cable TV-like services. Verizon and AT&T have led the fight against local franchises, and they won that battle in Texas, where they're now taking advantage of their state franchises to roll out their IPTV services. While IPTV looks like a win for consumers because it promises additional choices and competition, there are also several potential snags that consumer groups are watching. One potential loser with non-local franchising and IPTV is public access. The provision of these channels by cable companies is negotiated by local municipalities and is one of the few points of leverage left for cities over their local media. Negotiating cable franchises on a state or national level threatens to lower the provision of public access to the lowest common denominator, potentially shafting cities that have grown vibrant public access stations. Another snag is known as network neutrality. If a company like AT&T is providing both television and broadband access over the same network to subscriber homes, what's to stop the company from filtering out video content available on the internet so that it doesn't compete with its own IPTV offerings? At the moment, the answer is pretty much nothing. There is no law or regulation that prevents that from happening. Further, the heads of AT&T and Verizon have made it clear that they'd like to reserve that right. Meanwhile, the big phone companies, including AT&T and Verizon, are gearing up to start charging large internet content providers for carrying their high-bandwidth multimedia content. On January 5th, Verizon Communications Chief Executive Ivan Seidenberg told reporters that his company is in favor of charging companies that provide content like movies over broadband, saying, quote, "We have to make sure they don't sit on our network and chew up our capacity," end quote. According to an article in the January 6th edition of the Wall Street Journal, the nation's major broadband providers are in favor of a system whereby content providers would pay a fee in order to ensure their data receives priority treatment on broadband networks. Providers of content and services, however, see it differently. Jeffrey Citrin, chief executive of internet telephone service provider Vonage, told the Journal, quote, "They want to charge us for the bandwidth the consumer has already paid for," end quote. Any provider of internet content also has to pay for its own connection to the internet, and providing services like video or high-fidelity audio already require expensive high-speed connections. In essence, what the telephone providers want is the ability to filter out or slow down access to content they don't own or directly profit from. Such a pay-to-play scheme would be especially detrimental to non-corporate content. How many community radio stations or independent video producers could afford to pay additional fees to AT&T to guarantee their programs make it to internet users beyond the bandwidth fees they already pay to get their content on the internet in the first place? The net effect of telecom companies being able to restrict or prioritize internet content would be the creation of a two-tiered internet with regard to the distribution and sharing of content. Only producers who can afford to pay additional fees imposed by the telephone companies would be able to see their content make it to internet-wired homes, regardless of the fees they already pay for internet service. This issue of network neutrality will be the subject of much debate in Congress and the FCC in 2006. As part of the FCC's approval of the AT&T and Verizon mergers last year, the commission imposed limp-wristed and temporary network neutrality conditions on both companies. The telecom companies and internet companies are all busy lobbying Congress on this and other issues right now as legislators are assembling what will become the Telecommunications Act of 2006. Here at Media Geek, I will continue to keep you informed about what's going on, what it means, and maybe what we can do about it. And that is some what's going on in our media environment. And you are listening to Media Geek. I'm your host, Paul Riismandel. Coming up in just a moment, we'll be taking a look at Nexstar. They're a rising television company you probably haven't heard of, but it made headlines this week because their stations are refusing to carry an NBC program. And of course, check out Media Geek online, www.mediageek.net. You can also get the radio program online, radio.mediageek.net. Subscribe to the podcast, download it when you miss it or when you want to hear something again. Of course, there is the Media Geek blog. All more information for you online, mediageek.net. And I'll be back in just a few moments. Do stay tuned.
L.A. Plush.
You know, you're tuned in tonight.
Be careful.
You're tuned in tonight because you're passionate about the music.
Be careful.
That very special connection between the fan and the artist is an historically important partnership, one which enriches and entertains the public, motivating and sustaining the creator. In recent years, industry consolidation combined with the unbridled advance of the internet has created a disturbing disconnect.
I am so out of the loop
in our relationship.
I'm sorry, I took your time. I am the poem that doesn't rhyme.
Keep singing! Bomb to da bom da bang a bang diddy diddy poop in the cocky dooky bucky mini mini. Bomb to da bom da bang a bang.
Bucket
mini mini. The hell is that?
Be careful.
Downloading.
Can you do that?
Be careful. Be careful. Be careful.
Delete. Delete. Don't let anybody steal.
Be careful.
No question, the most insidious virus in the midst of this illegal downloading of music is piracy on the net.
Can you do that?
I got the latest tracks we all know.
I know I ain't much, but you can have me for free.
And trends say it's gonna promise to get much, much worse.
Download.
It's easy, it's exciting, and it's free.
Download.
Piracy from poppy to trippy.
And from U2 to...
piracy.
Well, U2.
Piracy on the net. It goes by many names, and its apologists offer a myriad of excuses.
So the pound...
Rip.
The pound...
Rip.
Is with... user and the fan.
Ripping of music.
Not the legal
file sharing.
Which, quite honestly, I believe is the way it should be.
The guys have had the gun to the artist's head forever because they own the trucks, and suddenly the trucks don't matter.
And I think that the record industry should encourage fans to get more involved in music because that way, ultimately, lies the true dedication to music, and those people will be with you for a very long time.
Art as crime.
This illegal file sharing and ripping of music is pervasive, out of control, and it's oh so criminal.
Maybe he's right.
So criminal.
Maybe there is something the matter with me.
And it's oh so criminal.
I just don't see how a world that makes such wonderful things could be bad.
Ripping is stealing.
Look at this
stealing
stuff.
Just look at the world around you.
Stealing.
What more? But we're stealing nothing here in Media Geek, except a little bit of your consciousness here. We're not stealing it. You give it over quite willingly, I hope. You are listening to Media Geek. That's a bit of Negative Land from their most recent album, No Business. That track is called Downloading. And so on January 5th, a company called Nexstar made some mainstream news headlines. It's a company that a lot of you probably never heard of. That this company owns TV stations around the country, including actually 47 television stations in 27 markets. All around the Midwest and the South, places like Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Missouri, Montana, Texas, Pennsylvania, Louisiana, Arkansas, Alabama, and even New York. And they do have affiliates with NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, and UPN, all the major television networks except the WB. But the reason they made some headlines is because two stations owned by the company in Terre Haute, Indiana, and Little Rock, Arkansas, said they will not be airing an NBC program called Book of Daniel, which premieres January 6th. Now, this program has been the subject of a boycott campaign by several Christian groups, most prominently the American Family Association, due to the show's portrayal of Christianity, the fact that the lead character is apparently an Episcopalian priest with a drug problem who actually speaks to a modern embodied Christ. Ostensibly, that would be, you'd think that's the reason why the stations aren't going to be carrying the program. Both stations acknowledged that they had received many viewer complaints. Now, nobody's seen it yet, but many complaints about the proposed content of the program. But you dig a little deeper, and it's really about a scrappy, strong, little television owner really looking to leverage its power within the overall television system, both with the bigger networks like NBC, but also, as we'll explore in a moment or two, looking to exploit its power with cable operators and satellite operators. And this is something that more and more television operators are doing. The other one also making some waves its way is a company you may have heard of, if you've been listening to Media Geek and also paying attention to these sorts of issues, called Sinclair Broadcast Group, headquartered in Baltimore, Maryland. And the reason why it looks like there's something else afoot comes right out of the mouth of the general manager of Terre Haute Station, WTWO-TV, which is owned by Nexstar. The general manager also happens to be the executive vice president and the chief operating officer of Nexstar. His name is Dwayne Lammers, and he told Reuters on the 5th that the Terre Haute Station not airing the Book of Daniel, quote, has nothing to do with the program and has nothing to do with the AFA. He said, I think the system is screwed up. I think the network thinks we're going to do whatever they tell us to do. And I think the regulatory environment is flawed. End quote. So really what this is about, it's about Nexstar's relationship with NBC, which tends to have a fair amount of power in affiliation deals to tell individual stations what they can or cannot do, what shows they can or cannot play. Although the NBC affiliate in Salt Lake City has often not aired a lot of different programs based upon its objections over content. Salt Lake City being a relatively conservative city and the home of the Mormon Church of Latter-day Saints. But what's interesting looking at Nexstar is not just the way they're leveraging this with NBC, but how they've been flexing their muscle and leveraging as much power as they can around the country, especially in the last year. Now, here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, where Media Geek is produced, Nexstar is a local owner. They own WCIA, our CBS affiliate, Channel 3, the only commercial VHF channel in this area, as well as Channel 49 WCFN, which is a UPN affiliate. They've owned both these stations since January of 2001, and it is a duopoly, which officially is not allowed in the Champaign-Urbana-Springfield-Decatur market, which is where we are situated here, spreading across the central belt of Illinois. Officially, companies are supposed to only own one station, but Nexstar has gotten a waiver of sorts from the FCC to own both these stations, which had been sort of waived in prior by its previous local owner. But one of the things that they've been doing is pushing local cable operators to pay them cash money in exchange for airing their channels. And this is something brand new in the world of cable and satellite carriage. Typically, local cable operators do not pay direct payment to channels, to local channels, in exchange for carriage. Usually they work out some sort of deal, usually some sort of advertising exchange. But Nexstar pulled all of its channels off of systems owned by Cable One of Phoenix, Arizona, for all of 2005 until December 19th. So that meant viewers of Cable One systems in Joplin, Missouri, Shreveport, Louisiana, and Amarillo, Texas did not see their ABC affiliates and their NBC affiliates in these cities because they were owned by Nexstar and they had pulled them all off. It's been taking this hard line in negotiation with these cable operators. And it's a really new thing. Dwayne Lammers, again the same VP and the general manager apparently WTWO in Terre Haute, told Multichannel News and Industry Journal in December, quote, "We have changed the industry. We are getting paid cash from a lot of operators. So from that standpoint, it's mission accomplished. I can't talk about any of our deals specifically, but I can just tell you that it has been a fruitful period for us." And then just recently, Cable America, which is a small cable operator with systems in Missouri, Arizona, and California, is petitioning the FCC to deny Nexstar's license renewals for two Springfield, Missouri TV stations. Cable America is embroiled in a nasty retransmission consent negotiation with KSFX and KOLR, which is actually owned by Mission Broadcasting, but which is operated by Nexstar through an agreement. In its filings, Cable America claims the stations are being operated as a duopoly by Nexstar in violation of FCC ownership rules. They write to the commission, quote, "Nexstar and Mission, through a complex web of contracts and operating arrangements, have engaged in a subterfuge that violates federal law," end quote. The Springfield station's licenses are currently up for renewal, and opponents had until January 3rd to file charges with the FCC. The companies are at odds over Nexstar's demands that cable operators pay subscriber fees to carry its stations and Mission-owned outlets. Talks deteriorated so badly that Nexstar pulled the station's signals off Cable America's 8,000-subscriber system January 1st, and the negotiations are stalled. And of course, the biggest losers in most of these battles are the viewers who are losing their local television stations on their cable systems. As an interesting aside to this, Cable One, the previous company we're talking about in places like Joplin, Missouri, is actually getting fined by the FCC because during its year-long dispute with Nexstar, it decided to carry distant signals to bring in NBC programming into the Joplin and Texas TV markets, which it's not allowed to do by federal rules. By federal rules, a cable company can only carry local signals for the networks unless it gets the permission of the local network affiliate to carry a distant signal. So if you happen to live in Champaign-Urbana, we can only get the Champaign-Urbana NBC affiliate by our cable system by rules and law, unless the local affiliate says, yeah, you can get the Chicago station. Obviously, the Nexstar station did not give them permission. And so the FCC has proposed a fine of $20,000, which Cable One is right now disputing. So Nexstar has been aggressive all around this year. Similar things have happened in Hagerstown, Maryland, which is in the far western edge of the D.C. viewing area. And then we come back to Sinclair, the company I mentioned before. You might recall Sinclair. We talked a little bit about it last week on the program. But Sinclair is a program that was going to air the smearumentary Stolen Honor about John Kerry's Vietnam War record, and also pulled Nightline from its stations when Ted Koppel did an entire show in 2004 just reading the names of the American soldiers killed in Iraq. Well, they've now entered into a joint sales and shared services agreement in Rochester, New York. This actually happened back in August of 2005. So through the agreement, WROC-TV, Nexstar CBS affiliate, will provide sales and other non-programming services to WUHF-TV, Sinclair's Fox affiliate in the market. Essentially, they're going to operate the stations together. Essentially, really, Nexstar is going to be the operator of these two stations, creating another duopoly. I'm not sure if a duopoly is permitted in that market, but I'm going to guess that it's not. And Sinclair itself has been taking a similar hard line with Comcast over the carriage of its signals in six markets, including Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Nashville, and in Tennessee. And in Sinclair had to work an agreement with Verizon at the end of 2005, which includes stations in Tampa, Florida, Baltimore, Maryland. So you can see we have these middle-sized companies which are really been eating up and becoming bigger and bigger every year, taking on more stations either through outright purchase or by going into local management agreements. Interesting thing about the Mission Company, which owns stations managed by Nextar, is that Mission, by and large, does not actually operate any of its own stations. It merely owns them. Nextar operates all of them, which is why they're being accused of subterfuge to get around FCC rules. And this is what's happening in our local media markets. What's interesting about the Sinclair-Nextar dealings is that we have both Sinclair and Nextar stations here in Champaign-Urbana where Media Geek is produced. This is how media ownership, this is about who owns what, may impact what goes on in your local community. Between not seeing programs offered by national networks like NBC or seeing your stations evaporate off of cable or satellite systems when companies like Nextar goes asking for more money to see their stations through. And of course, Nextar could use the cash because their most recent year-end, 2004, they saw a revenue of $247.7 million, which was nearly $50 million more than in 2003, but they still saw a net loss of $18.2 million, still better than 2003 when they had a net loss of $87.1 million. And a lot of this has to go, is due to them going out and buying up a lot of stations very quickly. And who else does this sound like? Have we ever seen this before? Think radio. Think the name Clear Channel. And then the question that goes out there, and it is just a question this time, how long before the likes of Nextar and Sinclair, two companies very close to each other with regard to size and with regard to the number of stations they own, how soon before they join together to do battle with the top 10 TV owners like Fox and otherwise known as News Corp and CBS? Keep a look on who owns your local media. And that's what we try to do here at Media Geek, and to try and make it real and let you understand how it all fits together. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in 1 week with more news of our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at www.mediageek.org. There you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views on independent media. You'll also find archive editions of the program in MP3 and the open source Ogg Vorbis format. You can also subscribe to the podcast to have the program automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Luo. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Portions of the program are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. Media Geek is also aired on community radio stations KQRP in Salida, California, KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, and WRFA in Jamestown, New York. And Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial or community radio station, too. Just email Paul at mediageek.org. You can use that email address to send comments, too. I'm always interested to know what you think of the show. Again, that's Paul at mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.